Securities and advisory services through Independent Financial Group, LLC, a registered broker-dealer and investment advisor member, FINRA/SIPC.
Good morning, America. Dennis O'Brien from the Retirement Life and Investing Show. How's everybody doing today? It's about 27, cool but beautiful day out there today. And I'm here on 94.9 News Now with your host, Dennis O'Brien, owner and operator and chief watering the plants guy at O'Brien Retirement, located off exit 90 down from Stakeloff. Easy to find, easy to talk to, too. Today's show is going to be called Estate Planning and Elder Care. A fun topic, right? Or subtitled, Don't Let the Nursing Homes Rob You Blind. My guest today is Wade Jensen. A lot of you probably know Wade. Wade has his own firm now in the Packer Building in Mystic. Jensen, Estate Planning and Elder Law. Wade, thank you, and thank you for coming on the show today.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you so much.
The name sort of explains everything I do. It's funny.
There's no doubt about it.
I was trying to determine, and you'll see a lot of, it could have been Jensen and Associates or law offices of Wade Jensen, but really it was my family that said, no, Dad, you got to tell them what you do. I really like it. I think it does illustrate that I'm not going to be doing litigation or anything like that.
So. Right. Now, for many of you out there who've never met Wade or never heard of him, Wade's considered probably the best elder care, in my view anyway, the best elder care estate planning attorney in the area. He's been around a long time. We've dealt with him family-wise. He's very highly considered by other professionals. He's referred to many, many times. And I kind of stumbled upon him. Somebody had reached out and at his old firm, and then I realized he had opened up his own firm this week.
Yeah,
right? This literally
actually February 1st, last Friday.
Last Friday was his first day, and I kind of stumbled across him, and I said, "Wait a minute, nobody knows where you are. Let's get you on the radio and talk about it."
So no, much appreciated.
Now I'm glad you came on. I'm really glad, and we've been able to reconnect through our mutual friend Michelle and other people and whatnot. Now I'm going to tell you something I heard the other day, and you probably shake your head, but the other day, I was talking to a nurse who told me that she was in one of the nursing homes in the area. Mm-hmm. And she said the chief financial officer of the facility was doing laundry at the facility. And she said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "We are so short-staffed right now that it's absolute travesty. And they have fired people. My kids were young. Some of the kids came out of high school and they went to work in one of the nursing homes. As soon as they started making $13, $14, $15 an hour, they fired them."
Oh, wow.
Just the accounting.
Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough business. And of course, I think when people see what it costs, obviously it's $400 a day is a lower end of the spectrum. And so when you're dealing with $12,000 or more per month, it's kind of frightening, and I know a lot of people say, well, how can they be short-staffed and stuff with that kind of income? But such a large proportion of the residents at each of the facilities have run out of money and or qualified for Title 19, also called Medicaid, and the state reimbursement rate is maybe two-thirds of that.
Two-thirds.
And so their income, as people go off of private pay onto government assistance, their income drops significantly.
So they can go from $9,000 a month to $5,000 or $6,000.
Well, it's more like they go from 12 or 13 to 7 or 8.
See, that's when you can tell how old I am, because I'm dealing with 10-year-old numbers because I don't keep track of it.
But the other thing, I know you mentioned the laundry. I was with a family just yesterday, and they've begun doing the laundry for their parent.
For their parent.
For the very reason that
you can imagine. The sheets.
Well, the clothing and
the
things, because it doesn't come back. Let's say you bring in nice clothing for a parent or spouse, and it's going to end up somewhere else.
And don't take this criticism of the wonderful people that do work with the elderly in the nursing homes, because many of you, I know you work long hours and you're underpaid and everything else.
Absolutely.
What we're criticizing is the management's, okay? Because we feel and we see, and Wade goes into these homes, and I hear the stories from clients who work or deal with it, and it comes back, and I just filter it back to you guys and say, hey, listen, this is what's going on.
Well, no, I mean, I tell families there's never going to be any facility that you're not going to have some reservations about.
Right.
But there are aspects of being in a facility. I've actually had women who thrive there.
Right.
Just because of the social aspect.
Right.
The, you know, being at home alone, even with a caregiver who maybe sits in the corner texting all day and doing a few things here and there, that's a pretty isolating existence too.
Right.
So I've had many situations where the lack of privacy you have in a facility is more than made up for by the socialization.
Right. As long as they can get out of bed and socialize.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. If they're bedridden, and it's a whole nother, that can be a real tough situation and everything else. Now, you and I have known each other a long time because our kids played sports together.
That's right.
Do you remember that?
Back to Mystic Little League.
Yeah, Mystic Little League and Babe Ruth. And then one night, my boy was playing for Fitch High School basketball, and you had two sons on the Stonington team.
The one year,
And do you remember our conversation before the game?
No, I don't.
I walked up to you, and your older son, Alex, right?
Right.
I said, well, I think he's going to score 50 tonight, and I think your other son is going to score 40. And you looked at me like, no. Right? And I think it came in, Alex came in at 52, and I think, what's the second
Blake.
One? Blake came in at 32 or
so
something.
That might have been one of his higher scoring
games. One of his highest scoring games. And but he was Alex went to play at Vermont.
Yeah.
And
he had a great college.
He did. He had a great
experience with that team. Yeah.
Remember when they played at UConn and the NCAA?
The NCAA tournament.
Well, Ben Gordon and
they had tough draws. I remember Alex actually the year that Gordon's team won the NCAA title that year.
Yeah.
Vermont played them, and it was actually, we gave them as close a game as anybody.
Yeah.
And I think it was like about a 8 or 9 point game, fourth period or late second half, and Alex knocked the ball loose, and he was going in for a layup with Ben Gordon right on his back.
Right.
And Ben, I think he got a piece of the layup, and it came rolling off the rim, and our big Taylor Coppenrath came to dunk it. It came off the back rim hard, and they went down and hit a three, and that was a game.
That was
the
game.
Instead of us getting two, they got three. But but no, Vermont had a they were a very enjoyable group.
I'm sure Alex heard some choice words from the UConn bench when Jim Calhoun was coaching.
Oh yeah,
Jim was known for his.
He was tough.
He was tough.
Disciplinarian.
Yeah, real tough disciplinarian.
Yeah, the other the one thrill for me was though Alex did hit a three against UConn.
He did a three.
That was quite exciting.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing.
But I think that Fitch game, if I'm not mistaken, at Fitch that year, Alex scored his 2,000th point.
Wow.
And so they stopped the
game. They stopped the game and gave
him the ball. I'm 99% sure that was the game.
He was a great, great shooter. I really enjoyed it. Anyway, if you like my retirement 10 commandments, go to O'BrienRetired.com, and I'll be happy to send them to you, and hit the magic button if you'd like to make an appointment. We'll be back in a few with the Retirement Life Investing Show on News Now Radio 94.9. Thank you. Back to the Retirement Life Investing Show. Dennis O'Brien. I'm with Wade Jensen, president and owner of Jensen Estate Planning and Elder Care. Wade's been around a long time. He knows a lot of stuff about elder care planning, estate planning, and let's talk about that a little bit. So what made you want to open up your own firm, Wade?
Well, I've sort of begun specializing. You know, I'm not doing as much of the probate and real estate as in the past, just the minor things. But really wanted to focus more on the long-term care planning for couples and the estate planning, and just it looked like a good time of life. Like you said, I've been doing it a long time, right. So I also have some grandkids, and I want just a little more flexibility with my time.
Exactly. What are the biggest mistakes that you see people make when it comes to estate planning and elder care?
Well, I think they don't head things off at the pass.
Right.
You know, what I say when I meet with couples, that estate planning isn't like accounting or investment advice where you're going to see your clients regularly.
Right.
You know, people who see me, I may not see them again 10, 12 years. And you know, what would constitute a need to come back? And I always say, well, it's a lot of times it's the unexpected things. It could be an inheritance.
Right.
It could be a death in the family, you know, an unfortunate child predeceasing, and we want to deal with how do we treat that family branch's share of the estate. Now, do we need trust for grandkids? Do we want the in-law to participate in gaining some financial advantage themselves? But mostly, I say, when there's health deterioration.
Right.
Certainly, if somebody is diagnosed with a progressive disease,
right,
where we know over time they're going to need more and more care.
Right.
They don't need a nursing home now, but the likelihood is 10 years from now I'm going to need a lot of care.
Right.
So the progressive disease, we can do a lot to head things off at the pass from a financial planning point of view. I think probably 4 out of 5 of the cases I get an opportunity to work with them, but the care is on the horizon.
Right.
We're at the nursing home now.
Right.
And we're going to do something now. And so you don't have nearly the same opportunities to do prudent planning.
So if they had come to you sooner,
correct,
you had a lot more room to operate in terms of moving assets.
Well, for example, I would say one situation that we confront frequently is an elderly couple. They kind of enable each other. And one of them passes away. And now the widow or widower is not only the owner of everything, but needing care.
Right.
And certainly we could have done better than that.
Right.
A lot of my elderly couples that are both kind of needing care but helping each other out, neither one has a specific thing that would cause alarm.
Right.
But they're just going feebler with age and needing care. Oftentimes what I'll do there, Dennis, is we'll take the house, which is for many of that age their most valuable asset. And instead of owning it jointly with right of survivorship, we'll own it as tenants in common.
Right.
And we'll revise their estate plan. So instead of what I call the honey, I love you, Will, it's all yours, which happens with joint ownership automatically.
Right.
What we'll do is we'll save half of the family assets that are owned individually by the deceased spouse, so that we certainly know that half won't have to go toward health care costs. So that's just one of the strategies in a particular situation.
Is that done by will or is that done by a living trust?
No, what we have to do in Connecticut for if someone passes away, Connecticut law, the statutory right that spouses have, probably one of the most meager in the nation, is 1/3, but the surviving spouse doesn't have a statutory right to 1/3 of the deceased spouse's estate. They have the right to have 1/3 set aside, and all they do is get the income from that.
Okay.
So it's a pretty meager right. If someone passes away with a $300,000 estate, the statutory right of the spouse is $100,000 set aside, and I get the income.
And that's if there's no will.
Well, that's the statutory right, that you can either take what you're given under the will,
right,
or you can make that election against the will.
Right.
So if we have $300,000 individually owned, not jointly owned,
right,
and one spouse passes away, that $300,000 in essence is fully protected. $200,000 can go to the family immediately,
right,
and $100,000 has to stay in a trust under the will.
Under the will, okay.
And we pay the income to the surviving spouse, and then when the surviving spouse passes, the $100,000 goes likely to the same place the $200,000 went. So we can protect and make sure that at least half of a couple's estate won't get eaten up by health care costs.
Right. So the motto of the story is plan early.
Yeah, I think so.
Plan early.
You know, I tell my families, certainly if either husband or wife is diagnosed with a progressive disease, then we're going to take steps early on so that, I mean, I'm sure many of the listeners have heard that five-year look back.
Right.
What we're doing is trying to put things in the best light possible for 5 years from now.
Right.
But if we do that today rather than the day that you're hiring help to come in,
right,
we can certainly do a better job of preserving the family.
So at 65, you're kind of like, okay, let's start thinking about 70. But by 75, 80, really should start.
Definitely.
Getting those documents all lined up.
Yeah, my couples that are in their 80s, that's frequently when we will change the ownership of the home.
Okay.
And I know a lot of people talk about transferring the home to children. And I'm generally speaking not in favor of doing that until I'm dealing with a widow or widower.
Right.
The home is an exempt asset. And so with a married couple, if one of them needs care, the home can be completely owned by the healthy spouse. There won't be a lien put on it later or anything like that. We'll be forced to sell. And so,
because the nursing home can't grab the home.
Well, yeah, health care costs. It's like I said, it's an exempt asset.
Right.
So while I have a couple intact, because I see so often where if the husband passes away, the wife may want to downsize. She may want to relocate near a child.
Right.
And so having given the house away already really puts some handcuffs on the financial strategies. And so generally what I do is I'll sit down with a widow or widower now, and I'll say, okay, are you pretty certain you're staying here? You know, maybe we'll give it four seasons or something. But we often, with the widows and widowers, will transfer the home in one way, shape, or form to the children, generally with reserving life use so that the parent's totally protected.
Right.
And starting the five-year clock running at that point, because with a widow or a widower, that house is not an exempt asset.
Right. What about the 401ks and IRAs? Many times now they're becoming bigger than the home.
Right. Well, the biggest issue with those, when we have a spouse in the nursing home,
right,
ultimately there will come a point in time, not immediately, but probably within 6 to 9 months, where to remain eligible to stay on state assistance, the spouse in the nursing home cannot have more than $1,600 available in assets. So one of the costs in Connecticut of long-term care is we are going to probably have to cash in the IRA.
In the person who's in the nursing home's name.
Exactly. Right. Now, living where we do, so close to Rhode Island treats retirement accounts differently. I'll give you one example. We had a younger gentleman with early onset.
Right.
And my experience with early onset is you don't live terribly long.
Dementia or Alzheimer's?
Yeah, Alzheimer's. Yeah. And so it's generally 4 years, I would say, maybe 3-4 years.
Really?
Well, when Pat Summitt was diagnosed.
That's right.
I mean, I knew
she
was.
I think it was 3 or 4 years.
It was about 3 or 4 years. And that's very typical when someone
gets diagnosed early.
And so in this case, I think it was an EB retirement account that was $400,000 or so.
Right.
And so I talked with the wife about his placement, and I really recommended placing him in a Rhode Island facility, because Rhode Island does treat retirement accounts differently. You don't have to cash them in, and the only thing that's required is the, quote, required minimum distributions, which don't begin until you're 70 and a half.
Right.
So in this particular case, by going to a Rhode Island facility, his 401k remained intact. You know, he was in his late 50s, early 60s.
Right.
And did pass away a couple years later. And so the entire retirement account was intact and passed to the spouse, which she could roll over into her own.
How did they pay for it, though, while
We went on assistance.
You went on assistance.
Right. They were going through the channels with a Rhode Island attorney to obtain Medicaid in Rhode Island during that time.
But they were residents of Connecticut?
Well, he wasn't. He was in a Rhode Island facility.
So he became a resident of Rhode Island when he went in a Rhode Island facility.
Correct. Correct.
Oh.
So that's the one. And again, we have a lot of that in New London County, because we do have a lot of large retirement accounts from Pfizer and from EB. And so you're going to, we see that frequently, and that's something that the public, if they're aware of that, there can be a huge difference in what you're required to do.
Oh, my God, yes. Yeah. Huge, huge difference.
Yeah. So that's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up.
Okay, because half the house is protected already. The 401k IRA becomes protected because they become a resident of that state, and that state doesn't mandate the that being liquidated. And so the only thing that's really exposed is their half of their joint savings.
Right, and there's a lot of things we can do, productive spending, things like that. I'll give you a couple cute stories after the next break about the productive spending.
Yeah. You know, I did not know that about Rhode Island, so thank you very, very much, because that... that alone is that's a big deal.
Correct. I mean, not so helpful for someone in their 80s, where the required minimums are starting to
increase. They hit up to 6-8% in your mid 80s. I get that,
but even that can still be better. Yeah,
but still that can be a lot better than, especially at the
prices. The tax cost of cashing the entire thing in is substantial. That alone can be more than 1 year's care cost.
Exactly. Hey, thanks for listening. We're with Wade Jensen from Jensen Estate Planning and Elder Law. Wade can be reached at 860-415-4502. He's at 12 Roosevelt Avenue in Mystic in the Packer Building on the second floor. He just has a paper sign up right now, so don't walk by. He's in there. Trust me. My name is Dennis O'Brien. I'm with O'Brien Retirement. O'BrienRetire.com if you'd like my retirement 10 commandments, or hit the magic button and make an appointment. Be back in a few. Thank you. To the Retirement Life and Investing Show. Dennis O'Brien, president of O'Brien Retirement at Exit 90, down from Steak Loft. Hope everybody's doing well. I am with Wade Jensen. Wade's my elder care and estate planning expert. Wayne, I was with a client named Jim. Jim had several $1 million. And I said, Jim, you need to do some estate planning. And he was a tough old bird. Mm-hmm. Jim says to me, why? And I said, well, you can't take it with you when you go. You know what Jim said to me?
What's that?
How do you know? Well, Jim since passed, and his widow called, and she said, yeah, you didn't take it with him. I still have it.
You still, yeah.
So I just laughed.
That's a funny one. I was telling somebody the other day who's a statistician that I remember my statistics class in college, where the professor came in one day and he says, you know, I figure I got a 50% chance of not dying. And we were all looking at each other like, this guy's crazy. And he says, yeah. He said, and I think it was more a population explosion thing. He said, yeah, half the people that have ever been born are still alive.
Wow.
And so I said, that's called how to lie with statistics, right?
they can tell you. All right, I got some questions for you, okay? Why do people flock to these mass market attorney running seminars on living trusts? What's the deal there?
Well, sometimes it's the free lunch. And they usually go to pretty nice places to do the seminars.
Yeah,
again, I think getting any kind of an estate plan in place, including powers of attorney and health care directives to avoid the privacy.
Yeah.
Prohibitions from release of information. I think even if they go there, it can be useful to some degree. I think probably my bias, if you will, is that I think trusts are being promoted way, way, way too much. And I think the cost of estate planning when trusts are incorporated. And don't get me wrong, there's times when you want trusts.
Right.
Long time ago when we first were doing business together, the threshold for tax was so low that married couples who had any significant net worth at all needed trusts for tax reasons. Well, that's pretty much gone now.
Right.
Unless you've got a net worth of several $10 million.
Yeah, like $10 million now.
Well,
right?
For the federal. And the federal. Was the tax we were scared of. The state of Connecticut's in the process of phasing out its inheritance tax. So it's up over $3 million now, and it's on its way to $5.5 million.
Okay.
And so, again, leaving things to each other is not necessarily a mistake anymore.
Yeah.
And most married couples do, in fact, own things jointly, or they're the beneficiaries. So even if you did a will that left everything to me, unless your wife predeceased you, she would probably receive anything anyway, regardless of what the will said. And which brings me to a point. One thing I would point out to a lot of listeners is that you can have an estate plan, but you sure as heck better check into with your financial advisors who the beneficiaries of your life insurance are, who the beneficiaries of your retirement accounts are. I'm going to give you two examples because I think the listeners can relate to this. I had a woman in her late 30s with two young children come in because her husband had passed away, and he had a Northwest life insurance policy for $250,000 that he bought right out of college from his roommate. You know, we all have one of those.
Help me out, buddy. Yeah.
And of course, the roommate wasn't doing insurance anymore. But nonetheless, take a guess who the beneficiary of the life insurance was.
Parents?
The mother.
The mother. Yeah, it's very
common. Who was in a nursing home.
No.
And so you have two young kids, and the beneficiary of your life insurance is still your mother.
Yep.
Because you purchased the policy before you were married. So check those beneficiaries.
I see it all the time.
Exactly. I had another situation where a woman had left her job in Rhode Island and gone in to help dad, who was pretty feeble, I think had a little bit of Alzheimer's dementia. And the wife who'd been the caregiver, and we see this frequently, the caregiving spouse has health events like strokes.
Right.
So her mother was in the nursing home still alive, and of course they did all the paperwork and they got, you know, mom on Title 19. And that's fine. That's great, you know. They got the paperwork done. Okay, dad went to an attorney and told the daughter, don't worry, he had done a will that left everything to her. He had just passed away, so she came in to see me regarding the probate, and we looked at the assets. He had a car, which was going to go to the daughter now. He had a bank account that was going to go to the daughter now. He had an annuity that still named his wife as the beneficiary, so that didn't go to the daughter. And the house was still owned jointly with right of survivorship. They hadn't changed the ownership.
Oh, boy.
So the house and the major asset both went to the wife in the nursing home, even though he had done a will disinheriting her. Right. So I'm just saying, if your attorney doesn't spend some time with you going through your assets, and again, I generally don't like to spend a lot of time doing that with them, but I certainly point it out to them. I mean, right. They don't need to pay me $275 an hour to change beneficiaries.
Right.
You know, I'll get the documents done and try and do it as productively.
But the point is, if you've named a beneficiary on an IRA trust, 401k, life insurance, you can do anything with your will you want. That named beneficiary to that custodian is what counts, not
absolutely.
The will.
That's a contract with that company that's holding that money. And
that's what people don't understand.
They could not care less.
They
what
couldn't
the will
care
says.
Less what you said in your will.
Correct.
And
correct.
A lot of people don't understand
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Now, getting back to the use of trusts to, quote, avoid probate.
Right.
I think that's the major selling point at most of these seminars.
Because they sell that somebody can go into your file during probate and they can investigate it and you
privacy,
have no privacy and they start to scare you.
Yeah. And I think they scare you with costs. I mean, there's a group that comes down and puts on seminars in this area. And in their materials, they have the California probate fee schedule reproduced.
Right.
Now, I know my son's generation doesn't kick tires.
Right.
You know, they look at the brand name and the cost, and they decide that's how they determine quality.
Right.
You know, right. And I'm somewhere in the middle, but I know my dad kicked tires.
Yep.
He looked at things, and it surprises me that as many people from that generation as are going to that seminars don't question them and say, well, why is the California probate fee schedule here? And I can tell you why. They make a $500,000 estate look like I think you're going to pay $28,000 in probate fees.
Right.
No, in Connecticut, it's 1/3 of 1%.
Really?
Yeah. So you're going to pay it if you own real estate, whether you have the trust or not.
So in California, it'd be $28,000 for $500,000. In Connecticut, it would be
$1,800.
Yeah. Are you serious?
No, I'm absolutely serious. And so So I would say that, and the other thing they commonly do at those seminars is they say, oh my gosh, you know, probate can last forever. So forget cost. You're going to pay it either way if right. you own real estate.
Right.
And the cost, and then the time and trouble, and the judge takes control over things. Well, what I tell my families is the only problems I've had in probate, I was glad I was in probate. Because the problems don't go away by being in a trust.
Right.
They're usually fights between family members.
Right.
Or problematic assets, co-owned assets, things like that. It's nice to be in probate where I have a judge that can make some decisions.
Yeah, if he's a decision-making
judge.
If
you're in trust land,
yep.
the trustee makes those decisions.
Right. Removing a trustee is not easy.
And removing a trustee is not easy. And if you're going to litigate the trust, you're going to probably end up in Superior Court, which is much more costly and adversarial.
Right.
If I have problems, I'd just as soon be in probate court. And along those same lines, if we don't have problems, which is the vast majority, it only has to be open for 5 months.
Right.
That's the statutory claims period for creditors. So when a notice goes in the paper that an estate has been opened, number one, it notifies the world, even though it's only in the New London Day,
right.
that they got 5 months to make their claim.
Wow.
And if the house has been sold and cleaned out and stuff in 5 months, you're ready to go to probate and right. close things 5 months from when it was opened.
Right.
If all the beneficiaries are in agreement, they all sign off and you don't have to do an accounting.
Wow.
So if you're a sole beneficiary or it's you and a sibling or whatever,
speed it up.
You don't even have to do an accounting because right. the judge's job is to look out for the creditors, number one, make sure everybody's paid. But number two, the judge's job is to look out for the beneficiaries other than the fiduciary, other than the executor.
Right.
So they'll question legal fees.
Right.
They'll question, the executor's fees. They'll look at what took place to make sure that the beneficiaries of the estate receive an appropriate amount.
Right.
So, yeah. In my mind's eye, I do think it's easier to wind things up as an executor as opposed to trustee.
Okay. All right. Thank you for listening. This is Dennis O'Brien on the Retirement Life and Investing Show with Wade Jensen, an elder care attorney locally. And if you'd like my Retirement 10 Commandments or make an appointment or start the estate planning process, please contact me or Wade after the show, and we're more than happy to help you. My phone number during the week is 860-415-9614. Wade, what's your phone number?
Mine is 860-415-4502.
Excellent, excellent. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in a few minutes. Bye-bye. To the Retirement Life and Investing Show. My name is Dennis O'Brien, president of O'Brien Retirement, off exit 90 down from Steak Loft. And I'm with Wade Jensen from Jensen Estate Attorneys. I haven't gotten your whole
name
back.
Yeah, anyway. I got you.
We got a caller on the line. We have Dave from Groton. Welcome, Dave. How can we help?
Hi, fellas. It's a question for Attorney Jensen regarding long-term health insurance. Is that important to have as part of your estate plan?
The way that I consider it is if you can get long-term care insurance, absolutely. It's wonderful to have. It'll minimize the depletion of assets, certainly, and help us in our planning later on. Once you hit about age 60, the cost becomes a little prohibitive. But for those younger than age 60, if their cash flow permits, I would say that that's a wonderful investment. I would also say that one reason I would strongly say to do it if you can is because if you look at the federal deficit and state deficits, a huge chunk of that is related to Medicaid Title 19. So I do believe there's going to be more and more reform of the law, where some of the strategies we use now to preserve assets are probably not going to remain intact. And so I would think in preparing for the future, I would highly recommend it.
Thank you, Dave, for your call.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
You're welcome. One of the problems with long-term care is the premiums skyrocket when you get in your 60s and 70s, and the more you need it, and the more you're on a fixed income.
Correct.
And then a lot of the companies that did their assumptions wind up going out of business or canceling the products.
Oh, yeah. No, their actuarial assumptions early on weren't good.
Yeah, yeah. The best product I ever seen, and I don't do insurance, but if you're thinking of doing it, people out there, look for a universal policy that will... You put $100,000 in and it buys you about $300,000. Lump sum, $100,000 in, buys you about $300,000 worth of life and or health or nursing home insurance.
Right. Yeah, I've seen that product.
I like about it is either way, either your kids are going to get the money or you're protecting assets in retirement up to a certain dollar amount and you're done. Once you put it in, you're done with it and everything else. I've seen those policies and I like that, okay? But it's an excellent question. Thank you very much,
Dave. oftentimes when I sit down, if you have a couple that you have one is the high wage earner, is going to have the large pension, the large Social Security, and the other one isn't. And, of course, in our area, we have a lot of retired military.
Right.
Who don't necessarily have tons of savings, but they have high retirement income. I would recommend that person with the high income get long-term care insurance if feasible, because if that person is institutionalized, the spouse is only going to get a small portion of that income. And so someone who's drawing $6,000 a month in retirement, their spouse may get $2,000 if she or he has no more than Social Security.
Right.
And so to protect that income stream, I would recommend it in that situation to protect the high income, because the person doesn't need it for the low-income spouse, because if the low-income spouse needs care, the high-income spouse keeps all their income. They don't have to contribute any of it toward the care.
Right.
So that would be one situation when you're sitting down with families where I would recommend it. And it would be very useful.
All right. Wait, thanks for coming on. I'm just going to go back to my stuff before we close out the show and stuff like that.
No, it was a pleasure. Good to
see you. Thank you so much. Just back to the regular topics. Interest rates are creeping up, so lock up that floating loan if you have one. Economy's very strong. Houses under $500,000 in the region are selling quicker than in the past. A lot of people from Fairfield, Westchester are moving up because of the $10,000 limitations on deductions. They're buying houses up here for cash, and that market is very, very strong from what I'm hearing. This year, I'd urge you very much to hire a pro to do your taxes this year. The law is going to be very tricky, especially if you're self-employed or you have a lot of changes. Please get some help. There's a lot of good CPA and pros out there and everything else. GE is starting to break out, so take a look. For the first time in 15 years, I've been a heavy buyer of General Electric the last 2 weeks. Larry Culp, the new chairman, I think is a genius. And he's going to turn that company around, I do believe. How can I invest without taking the full risk of the market yet earn more than the bank? Give me a call and I'll show you my income portfolio. Although there are investments that have some risk, the portfolio currently is yielding between 6 and 7% current return. It's a good way to dip your toes in with some of the bank money without going full on risk with growth stocks. Our insured money market fund is yielding 1.4% and is FDIC insured up to $5 million per couple because it uses 10 banks to get maximum coverage. Reach out if I can help. I store student loans this week with someone in their 40s. You know, that's a thought. You know, when these people start going for help, that some of them are going to still have student loans. And they're not. They don't go away. So in probate court, have you seen a student loan in probate court yet?
I not recently, no.
But I think it's coming in the next 10 or 20 years, because I saw someone in the 40s with heavy, you know, decent student loans. So it's something to worry about. Let's get these things paid, people. Dave Ramsey does a great job on showing you how, okay? I did a retirement in a nutshell plan for someone whose net worth was close to $10 million this week. Everyone needs help, no matter what your net worth is. My son told me a coworker was making $50,000 a year, 24 years old in Manhattan, working for a tech company, first job out of school. She was there 9 months. Another company came in and paid her $70,000 to jump. And my son looked around and goes, what's going on here? I want a raise. I just laugh. But, you know, this is the stuff I hear from the thing. Another thing, if you're a car salesman and someone asks to do a test drive, I would suggest not putting down their existing auto, even if it's old and used. They probably love their car and will take it personally. I know you're trying to make as much as you can, but it's a very poor sales strategy. Smarten up, guys. Do not talk down their existing car. I'm always amazed by it's not a good strategy. It puts you in a very poor light. I took a drive to the hills of East Lyme this week to go see a new client and the beautiful lakes and ponds. I didn't realize how gorgeous it was up there. Have you been up that area?
Yeah, I have. Actually, it's funny. I have a motorcycle, and once my youngest son got his driver's license, that's when I got a motorcycle. And I got off of the main thoroughfares.
Yeah.
I grew up in Nebraska, North Dakota.
Did you really?
And once I got off the side roads, all of a sudden I was finding farms and animals. It really is an amazing area.
Eastern Connecticut really has so many beautiful areas. I'm amazed when I drive around and everything else. But that's really all I have this week. If you have any questions, 860-464-9490. And we were just talking on one of the breaks about IRA rollovers if someone passes away, the spouse.
I think if you would spend a little bit of time, that seems to be something that confuses people and they maybe make some mistakes.
Yeah.
I oftentimes will tell people if they're charitable in nature, that the IRA is a good place to do it, because then, as opposed to taking assets in the estate to make the charitable bequest, and then leaving family income taxable assets.
Right.
Sometimes, the charity won't have to pay tax on distributions from your retirement accounts. But spouses are the only ones that can roll it over into their own.
Directly, yes.
Directly.
Right.
None of the other beneficiaries can, and maybe you can give them what their options are, just so they'll know in the back of their mind, because again, that's set out statutorily. I oftentimes, even with spouses, if I have a young spouse, say in their late 40s, early 50s, advise them not to roll it over, because if they do, then if they need some of that money to take care of the family and they're under 59 and a half, they're going to pay an extra penalty for taking money out. Whereas if you could maybe explain how the stretch rules work.
Well, basically, if you want to set up a beneficiary IRA, if it's a parent to child, or parent to friend, or anything like that.
Or could be parent or parent to co-parent.
Co-parent, yeah, exactly, spouse, exactly. But you could basically roll it over, and it's called a beneficiary IRA. And basically what happens is you can roll it over, no taxes are incurred. And basically you have to do something called a required minimum distribution. But now it's based on your lifespan, and so it's much, much lower. And actually, the retirement in a nutshell plan, when we plan things out, and one of our philosophies is do not touch your principal as you retire. And then we do the next generation report, where we say, if your child, usually it's a child, gets your IRA or 401k, if they do a lump sum, we cut out 40% and then run the numbers from there, assuming they didn't spend it. Then we do a partial analysis, and then we do a full beneficiary IRA, full tax deferment. And some of the numbers
are amazing.
Amazing, because now, especially if the child or young adult is in their 20s, and they have another 60, 70 years of deferment. I mean,
I'm talking even if that's a $50,000 benefit.
It's absolutely amazing. And the cash flow from that to the child is incredible too. So I've seen them where the ending result is $80-90 million on a fairly modest amount at death because of the lifespan thing.
And the building up tax-free.
Tax-free. So it's this huge benefit that people haven't planned ahead
on.
And
so many beneficiaries' children begin taking it out right away.
They blow it right away.
And then the IRS is chasing them for the taxes.
If they didn't take the money out and everything else. So, thank you so much, Wade, for coming on. I look forward to having you coming on as many times as you'd like in the future, because I think it's a great benefit to all our listeners.
Oh, I appreciate that, and I'd love to do it.
Absolutely. And Wade, do you have your website set up yet?
I do not. That's okay. Kind of last in our...
Okay, call in when you do.
Okay.
We'll send everybody to that.
Okay.
My website's obrienretired.com. If you send me an email, dobrien@ifgrr.com, I'll forward it to Wade, and we'll get it. We'll get you an answer right back to him. Just bear in mind, he's moving over a lot of files, and he's very, very busy right now. But eventually, we'll get to you and make sure your questions are answered.
Oh no, we have a commitment. When we get a phone call or question or anything within 24 hours, we respond.
You and Beth will respond. Yeah. Excellent, excellent, excellent. So, in any case, if you like my retirement 10 commandments or set up an appointment with me or Wade, please let me know and just hit the magic button on my website, and we'll get you organized. Remember, plan, plan, plan. To those who plan, you could do well. And those who don't plan, plan to fail. Have a great week, everybody. Talk to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.